It's the 4th of July, 2008. This is Mike Benedetti, and you're listening to 508, a show about Worcester. Good morning, everyone. For the first time in maybe a month, let's keep our fingers crossed, we have a 508 that is both about current events and that you can hear the audio of clearly. This morning, Jeff Barnard is awake. How are you doing, Jeff?
Well, I'm just carrying my coffee over to a spot to sit down here.
All right, we'll get
here. We go.
We will get to hear the caffeine enter your system. I hear it takes 20 minutes for the caffeine to go into the blood after you've ingested it. So people can set their watches now.
It seems instant, though. Hold on. Nice, fresh brewed coffee.
So what do you see as being some big stories, maybe of this week or maybe of the past couple of weeks?
Well, there was a big story for about a half a day with this guy, Bruce Whale, who is a parks commissioner and has admitted to being guilty to embezzling like $16,000 from his former employer. But in the article told his lawyer to say, "I fully intend to remain on the Parks Commission." But within that day, that same day that article came out, apparently the manager was besieged with calls and asked the guy to resign.
Well, good for him. Good for him.
Yeah, the story only lasted a few hours until irate citizens called and complained.
Well, also, I have to say, also good for the Telegram and Gazette for posting timely stuff on their website about that story.
Let's see the other. There was another. Let me move to the blogging position over here.
Okay.
Because I had made note of a couple of things. Let's see. Drag the phone over here. The cigarette tax. People who smoke have to pay an extra dollar per pack.
Okay.
To affect this week.
Did you see that as being a big deal?
Well, there's a lot of smokers in Worcester. If you like I drive around the city when I'm driving the cab, people ask, I'd say 50% of the riders ask if they can smoke.
Okay.
And, you know, everywhere I go, I see people smoking. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal to people who can't afford it and they're addicted.
Here's what I got this week. As some sort of, well, for the Summer Nationals is going on this weekend.
Well, yeah, that's the biggest.
This is the big car event in Worcester, and you've got. I actually think you've got some pretty excellent coverage on your blog of this. I don't know if anybody else is posting videos of the setup and stuff like that. So that's pretty impressive. And I thought it was interesting. There's an interview with Bob Moscoffian this week in Worcester Magazine, which I really appreciated because
that's a good interview.
Yeah, and actually, in part because I kind of don't want to read an article about the Summer Nationals because I'm not a car guy, but I am curious about what is the deal with them. So I was glad that there's this interview with the founder Bob Moscoffian.
Yeah, the Motorhead phenomenon is mostly a boomer phenomenon. I think people in their 50s and 60s.
Yeah, I have a good friend of mine from high school who's really into cars and messing around with his car and customizing stuff. But only the one friend, I would have to say. I like the exchange where he mentions that he is driving a Yukon hybrid, and Alan Fletcher says, "Doesn't it chip away at your manhood to have a hybrid?" And Moscoffian says, "I thought it would, but I tell ya, go green. I really can't believe it." And this is a great interview. The photo of him, like he's like in the middle of saying something. He's got this cool white mustache that contrasts with the tan on his face. A great thing in Worcester Magazine. A lot of good stuff in Worcester Magazine this week. We've got a nice article in Worcester Magazine about the Tom Lewis art opening or art exhibit at the art museum. I have not had a chance to go down there yet. On the 10th, there is going to be a special, like, opening kind of ceremony thing there. And actually, that's the other big, event. Now, the Summer Nationals, I guess, is bringing 100,000 people into the city around this event, according to these articles. Is that right? 100,000 people?
Those are estimates. You know, you can estimate any number you want.
Okay. That would kind of double the population of the city, which seems like a big deal. It's already kind of a crowded city. The other big event, which is much smaller, is the Catholic Worker National Gathering, which is going to bring about 300 people, maybe as much as 500 people, into the city. Oh, hold on a second. I'm getting a... And Brendan Mellican is on the phone. How are you doing, Brendan?
Excellent. How are you?
Good. I was wondering if you have any top stories of the week. I think at this point, after about 2 seconds of talking, we've kind of exhausted our top stories, as usual.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think there was too much huge this week. Yeah, as usual.
I have a nice letter here from Joe McKee, Executive Director of AIDS Project Worcester, which is his response to the letter that Barbara Haller and Billy Bro had sent out to many people. That letter was essentially a public letter. It was sent to a humongous distribution list, although I don't think that they themselves published it. And this letter, I think, was sent to the same distribution list, so I'm equally happy to read parts of this letter. There's two sections of this letter from him, and basically in both sections of the letter he says in so many words that he would like a retraction and an apology. First of all, he talks about the here it is, All Care Pharmacy, which is opening soon at AIDS Project Worcester, is an independent retail pharmacy that will serve the entire Green Street and Canal District neighborhood, as well as clients of the agency. Mr. Dan Apelian is a registered pharmacist, owner, and a graduate of the Massachusetts College of Pharmacy. Counselor Haller and Mr. Bro described this new business as a, quote, de facto needle exchange, end quote. That is a blatantly false and unfounded statement, and by any standards of decency, should be retracted and an apology issued to this agency and Mr. Apelian. And I just sort of go down through complaining about this, talking about how Barbara Haller had been to a legislative breakfast where they talked about this project and about all. Mr. Apelian gave a presentation on All Care Pharmacy, its services, and why he chose to open his establishment at AIDS Project Worcester. Questions were taken throughout the presentation, and there was a Q&A at the end. Counselor Haller asked no questions, raised no concerns, or any issues during or after the event. Section 2 of the letter is about the claim that it is false. It is a false, unfounded accusation to imply, as is done throughout Councillor Haller's and Mr. Bro's letter, that AIDS Project Worcester supports, advocates, or, quote, wishes, end quote, to legalize, quote, drugs, end quote, by which I assume they mean classes of illegal drugs regulated by law. This false accusation is reprehensible, and AIDS Project Worcester deserves both an apology and a retraction from the authors. Counselor Haller and Mr. Bro left out a number of the organizations that attended the meeting and submitted letters of support for the grant, including the Worcester Police Department, the District Attorney's Office, the Worcester County Sheriff's Office, and the Worcester County Probation Office. Are these organizations also part of this imagined legalization conspiracy? Et cetera, et cetera. It's a nice letter. I think it is going to end up on Worcester Indie Media sooner or later.
Yeah, and you know, that's so needed, too. I mean, I think we've all discussed this one again, too, almost to the point of death. I mean, it's just been, it's been discussed quite a bit. But, you know, when you have somebody, and we can all say whatever we feel about the issue, but when you have someone who is actually an authority on the issue actually speak out, that's what's really required, because Billy and Barbara need to be called on just falsehoods. I mean, just logical falsehoods. And nobody does that.
This week it was brought to my attention that the whole Narcan issue is kind of, it seems to be completely irrelevant at this point, that this is that basically the city is getting a grant to talk about doing something.
Right.
this is like that great Onion article. I think it's time that we should think about start talking about starting a band.
Right. Yeah.
So this is like, I think it's time that we should think about starting to talk, or to talk about starting to think about doing something about addiction in the city.
Possibly forming a committee.
Oh yeah, it's time to form a committee to study forming a committee. That it's a few years out that anything would happen. Anyway, so it's unclear to me why these guys jumped on top of this whole Narcan thing and got smacked down pretty handily by the powers that be in the press. but who the heck knows?
Hey, Mike, did either of you see the front page of today's paper?
No.
I'm looking at it right now. I just pulled it up while we were talking here. It's kind of funny. There's a picture from the fireworks last night.
Oh, the cell phones?
The picture is of people's cell phone cameras, like, taking pictures of the fireworks. So it's a picture of pictures being taken. I mentioned that last night when I was leaving the fireworks, how every time I moved, someone was, like, hissing at me because I was blocking their view of the fireworks through their cell phone camera. I felt bad. You know, I mean, I was clearly ruining other people's good time, but just by moving. And I would like to point out to people that if you view your reality through the camera on your cell phone, you're doing it wrong.
Cell phones can't capture.
That's right. You should be looking through a regular full-sized
eyeball.
Camera.
You should be looking through a regular eyeball.
Right.
Oh,
that's it. You look through. There's nothing wrong with pictures. Pictures are awesome, and a lot of good has been done by cell. But if your entire life exists through the screen of a cell phone, you're just doing it wrong. That's
And how many photos are there on Flickr of last night's fireworks display? I'm going to say at least... Well, there's one guy who has a humongous amount of them on here. Worcester Fireworks 2008. So we will also link to this guy. S. Dowen. Do you guys know S. Dowen?
Yeah, it doesn't sound familiar.
All right, well, you will soon learn about his photography skills.
Did either of you make it to the Burnouts last night?
Oh, to the Summer National stuff?
Yes.
No.
No, didn't go, huh?
Jeff?
No, I didn't go out either. I spent the entire evening trying to upload some video to YouTube and finally gave up and uploaded it to Google Video.
Speaking of YouTube, we should mention that this is probably, everybody knows this by now, but that Viacom won a court case saying that Google, who owns YouTube, has to give them all the information about anyone who's ever viewed any YouTube video ever.
I feel so violated.
Well, and there are of course strong protections in this country against or of your video rental records, but these seem to not extend to your YouTube browsing habits. It is kind of sleazy. I would have to say the Internet Archive, which I tend to use because I tend to put up huge full resolution videos, explicitly does not keep any records to begin with of who's looking at their videos, and they're very proud of that.
As gross as this is, I'm actually kind of excited about the idea of, like, someday, like, the number of times that I've been Rickrolled may actually be entered into a federal court.
Yeah.
Like, that might actually make an official record of some form.
That would be the silver lining here, is that if this came out and this became semi-public, perhaps anonymized, somebody could do real academic work on Rickrolling.
I just want, like, a really passionate, like, defense attorney to, like, make his case, you know, against the prosecution by just, you know, passionately yelling at the top of his lungs, you know, and Brendan Mulligan has only been Rickrolled, you know, whatever. I think that'll be great. It could work out in our favor. There could be some humor here.
Well, I wanted to bring up the YouTube thing because it kind of connects to the Charter / Nebuad stuff that we have ranted about so many times, and I think ranted about at length in our last Lost episode. And Worcester Magazine, Scott Zoback has a little blurb this week called Charter Tracking on Hold. Charter Communications has frozen plans to track customers' internet browsing habits. As we reported in June, the company had been planning to test out a new program, including several markets, including central Massachusetts, that would intercept data that was transmitted over their lines. Local Charter spokesman Tom Cohen says that for now, plans are on hold. Central Mass was going to be one of the pilot areas. We're not going to launch at this time. Fie on the Telegram and Gazette for being cowards and not even covering this story. Security Now, which is a podcast I listened to this week, has the second part of an in-depth look at what the heck is going on with these tracking things. And this is a pretty technologically savvy podcast, I think. And these guys are pretty much like Fie on Nebuad, Fie on all these people who are screwing around with your network traffic in order to squeeze a couple of more pennies out of you.
Well, if they can do it, they will.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the way I look at it. If it can be done,
it will be done.
Some huge technological turnover, you know, if they can do it, they will.
I wanted to go back to this Catholic worker thing real quick, that the Catholic worker national gathering, because I don't think I mentioned it all the way clearly before.
How many people did you say would be?
It's going to be like 300 people are going to be coming. This is, as I like to say, this is probably the largest gathering of felons in Worcester since the last Democratic state committee meeting.
The largest gathering of what?
Of felons in the city of Worcester. You got a lot of people who've done a lot of crazy civil disobedience in this crowd.
That's awesome.
This is going to be basically, I mean, if you go to Pie and Coffee, it's at the top of the page of the schedule. It's basically Wednesday night. Wednesday night's not going to be that fun. It's basically Thursday and Friday during the day. We're going to have Mass Saturday morning. The bishop will be presiding over Mass, which is pretty cool. The bishop, not known for being a super progressive guy or, you know, basically for not a risky guy in any way. You know, we're going to have a couple of speakers and some presentations, and somebody's going to be doing a play about the life of Dorothy Day, and you can just sort of look at all the stuff on there. And again, it's all open to the public if anybody wants to come down. We were just saying, Brendan, that the Summer Nationals, somewhere in the article, is talking about 100,000 people coming into the city. So this is going to be a somewhat smaller national convention.
Did they have vendors?
What kind of
profits will the city make?
Will there be fireworks?
There won't be any. I don't think there's going to be any fireworks. I don't think there's going to be any vendors.
Girls? There got to be some good looking women?
Yeah, probably. Probably. I mean, you know.
What are the group's expectations, though? For, like, do they usually have, like, say, like a law enforcement presence? You know, like photographers and whatnot. Is there some like surveillance?
No, I don't think that there's going to be. I've been to Catholic worker gatherings and never felt like we're being surveilled.
Cool.
I mean, it's possible. I think that it's kind of like a few years ago, maybe it was last year, some local students wanted to do a. An event in support of Jeff Lures, who I believe was the guy who torched a bunch of SUVs and was doing a bunch of time for this, and they felt that he had received an unjust sentence for setting these SUVs on fire. So as part of this, they were going to show a movie about him or something like this. And whenever this got to local law enforcement, there was like a huge amount of problems. I mean, like all kinds of people were saying you can't have the event here, I think. There was all kinds of police presence. There was all kinds of whatever around this event. So I think it's the kind of thing that if somebody says to the Worcester police, oh, you should look into this, they'll look into it and might send some cops or something to hang around. But I doubt it. The thing is, like, if people were going to do something, I think that they would announce, you know, like they would make it known that they were going to do something.
Right.
It's not uncommon for Catholic workers to get together for a couple of day event and sort of wrap things up with whoever wants to getting arrested. And this is usually announced ahead of time.
Cool.
What are you going to do in the city of Worcester? I don't know. I should mention just one more thing that only I care about. The Rosary trial. We got a letter yesterday from the U.S. attorney. You may remember in our last chapter that at our pretrial hearing, the U.S. attorney had said, you guys should not be allowed to use the necessity to defending your illegal praying of the Rosary in the federal building, because you could have so easily gotten a permit.
Yeah, and now it's the building manager you have to go to. How many different places have you looked for this permit?
Jeff has read Pie and Coffee already this morning that the building, basically they sent a letter back, kind of a snotty letter, but whatever, it's their job to be snotty, I guess, saying, you know, you should have talked to the building manager. Like, why did you, you know, so I don't know. So Ken Caniford Riccardi basically went in there, he talked to the people at the front desk, they were like, maybe you should talk to the U.S. attorney's people. The U.S. attorney's people were like, we don't know what you're talking about. Sends them to the marshal's office. The marshal's office is like, we don't really know what you're talking about, but we'll check around. A couple days later, they say, nobody knows anything about this, but apparently the building manager secretly knows
now,
what's going on.
Is that really the custodian?
I don't know. I don't know.
The building manager,
Mr. Farley,
I hope,
is somehow involved
about
in your court case now.
I can tell you that we will be probably going down there because even though the letter implies that this was somehow a setup that we did, that we somehow willfully were trying to not get a permit. In fact, we would actually like to get a permit to hold an event in the federal building. I think there's a lot of groups in the city who from time to time would like to get a permit to hold an event in the federal building.
Like a bar mitzvah.
like a that's what we were joking about, like, you know, that like if it was possible to get a permit, you would have think somebody in living memory would have gotten a permit, and so somebody at the federal building would have heard about, oh yeah, if when you get a permit you can talk to this guy. But I think like political stuff, like people who are pro or anti-abortion, people of any kind of Supreme Court thing coming up that they feel passionate about, certainly anti-war stuff, that people would definitely be up for, like, doing a demonstration a month or whatever inside the federal building in the morning. I don't know. It would, so, I mean, we definitely went to it. Like, we did 43 – for 43 days we were, like, doing vigils outside that federal building this year. So it would have been there were definitely days when, at least weather-wise, it would have been nice to go inside.
If you can't get in touch with the building manager, though, that's when you should reorganize another protest. But just, like scribble out by hand a really, like, terrible, like, permission letter signed to the management, and just bring it with you. And, like, tell the marshals, hey, the building manager said we could do it. And see if that gets you anywhere. That would actually be worth getting arrested, re-arrested, just to try and watch, you know, a group of marshals figure out if this actually is a handwritten note from the building manager.
And that would be that might be a good idea, but that seems a little disingenuous. Like, we're trying to be very upfront and straightforward with people on this. Like, we were really not trying to trick somebody at the building into saying, oh, there's no permit. We were legitimately trying to say, okay, you can get a permit. Let's go get a permit. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think you want to make this about, like, the permitting process. That's sort of a sideline. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there this morning. I should say also, one last item that only I care about is that apparently in the 2007 book Ian Dale's Guide to Political Blogging in the UK, the contributors to Pie and Coffee are referred to in the preface as extra respectable.
Oh, really?
I kid you not.
Excellent.
I'm going to put this up there.
Extra respectable.
I don't know if this person actually read our blog or not, but or has met us, but there you go. Pretty sweet.
I have a couple of other items.
All right.
One of those is the renaming of Central Street, which has been challenged by the one building owner on the street
right.
that has a Central Street address, Philip Schwachman, and his cohorts have protested, and the Highway Department is where they sent their petition. Highway Department is expected by law to notify the town clerk for the town that the change is supposed to be made in forthwith. Which means immediately, but they didn't do it for a year.
Huh.
They didn't bother notifying the city clerk until a year after the petition had been sent and filed. And now they've got a court injunction against the city for 10 days while they investigate and have a hearing. So it won't be Martin Luther King Boulevard yet.
But it already is, right?
No, they haven't put the signs up.
Oh, they really did? Okay.
Yeah, the judge has said you can't put the signs up until the hearing is... but they took down the Central Street signs. So this is, you know, typical Worcester stuff, man. It really is. Hmm. You know, didn't they talk to the one person on the street before they went through with this to say, is this all right with you? Are we going to have any problems with you? But no, they didn't. I mean, that's just so typically Worcester. The other thing is the guy who owns Johnny C's Urban Wear down there in Webster Square. He got busted for fake drugs.
For fake drugs?
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't catch him with any drugs. What they did is they spent 3 or 4 months seducing him into offering to buy drugs, which weren't actually drugs.
Oh, so they sold him fake
with
drugs.
Intent to buy cocaine, but... not real cocaine, and intent to distribute it. So that was an interesting tactic by the and they have a DEA special heavy tactic weapons. You know, this strange DEA. I can't see if I can find it, but it was this big long mouthful of words. This task force that came and here it is. It's the. Let's see.
This guy has a pretty interesting record, too.
Well, yeah, he does. And that goes without saying, that they didn't target some innocent guy. But Drug Enforcement Administration's High-Intensity Drug Trafficking Area Task Force.
They sound terrible. I imagine they wear, like, stormtroopers' outfits.
Yeah, and now what? My only question is, why would they spend 3 or 4 months negotiating with this guy to charge him with trying to buy what he thought were drugs?
A good sense of humor.
Instead of simply investigating him and catching him with real drugs.
Well, therein lies the rub, Jeff. He would never have had the real drugs because he was out looking for them. And who else could provide that much drugs than the DEA? Yeah. What's interesting is that I think the DEA must actually have a great sense of humor, because also this week the World Health Organization released their report on the entire planet. And it's like how the United States, by and far, is the largest consumer of drugs on the planet.
Yep.
So the DEA, the agency charged with the war on drugs, is actually helping this by selling drugs, right? So our numbers are being bumped artificially by the people who benefit most from the war on drugs, apparently.
Truly.
And
they're
in theory putting more drugs on the street with this long-named, this incredible acronymed group.
This gets into this whole question of, should government be competing with private businesses? I say no. I say no.
Well, you know, it is interesting if you look at that report. It's not just funny for the people who kind of have been saying for decades now that, you know, the war on drugs isn't working. But if you look at the breakdown of countries who have the highest consumption rates, especially where cocaine is involved, it's the countries that that can claim the highest, you know, gross domestic product, right? I mean, it's the countries with money.
I thought it was the countries that claimed the highest amount of money spent on preventing drug usage.
Well, it is also
law enforcement.
Those tend to be the countries that actually have a lot of money to spend on anything, which is interesting. When you look at the breakdown, like Colombia is like the very last country on the list for cocaine use. The United States is way up here on the top. Like, even though the Colombians are making all the cocaine, right, they can't be bothered with the crap. They just send it up here, you know, so Americans can use it. It's a really interesting study.
Yeah, well, I tend to look at the whole illegal drug scene worldwide as an unregulated commodities market.
Yes. Yes.
And if it's not regulated, then and it's declared, you know, something grows in the ground and it's illegal. The absurdity of the situation is just incredible.
Well,
it's so absurd that people can't believe when you take that position that drugs, the whole law structure of law should be changed. You know, they look at you like, what are you, crazy?
In other, you know, drug-related news this week, we had another study coming out on mushrooms, showing that, you know, mushrooms are like the best. Yeah, the best thing you could possibly do for depression. Well, that's all, and I think a lot of people have known that for a really long time. But
there's a lot of
explaining that to your mom when you're 17, right? It's not going to go anywhere.
let me ask you. The last time I think we talked about drug legalization had to do with possibly legalization in Massachusetts or decriminalization of possession.
That's coming up on the ballot.
Mm-hmm. So that is. And Gary Rosen had suggested that there be some kind of hearings in Worcester about this.
Yeah, they missed the window for it.
So there's not going to be any hearings.
No. See, there was a brief period of time where the questions that are going to be on the ballot, since the signatures were there and they're going to be binding resolution questions, they could have been adopted by the state senate, or you know, they could have been adopted by, you know, the state legislature to vote upon.
Okay.
Like, and it basically speeds up the process. So if they see something that like clearly has support, they can put it in with like a favorable view and vote. And there were a couple of bills that were working through the state senate in parallel. There was a medical marijuana bill that was seen as favorably by the state senate, and then there were a couple other versions of what will end up seen as a binding resolution question. Those would have had to have been voted on by the state senate. And I think it was back in May. I think it was by like, you know, the second week in May or something. They would have had to decide whether or not they would push them forward themselves. The state senate decided not to, which wasn't too surprising. And that's what Gary was actually referring to, was the time frame that they would have needed they would have had to, like, essentially petition to speak out against the state if the state was going to vote on this, but the state decided not to vote on it. They're just going to leave it to the voters.
If they had voted it down, it still would have gone on the ballot.
Correct. It's just there's a strange provision that kind of allows for the legislature to accelerate things that are going to end up on the as binding resolution questions.
Keep talking about this or something else. I'm going to run downstairs and see if I can find the In-City Times. There's something amazing in there. Just a second.
It'll it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I mean, every time it's surprising how many people don't realize this is going to be a binding resolution question. And the interesting thing is, you know, I think it's going to win. I think it's going to be a landslide. I mean, I'm almost willing to, you know, put $10 on this being an absolute landslide.
Well, if everybody votes.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You've got to get the vote out in order to
have that. The thing that's interesting, though, is, you know, we've done this a number of times throughout the state over the last couple decades, where almost every ballot that we've had in the state has had a non-binding resolution somewhere at some point in time in the state on decriminalization of marijuana. I mean, this has been a very well-orchestrated sort of progression towards this point. And every time we've had one of those non-binding resolutions, going back years, they are always very successful, no matter what community they're in. So the only thing that's going to be different about this will be the first time, since it's a binding resolution question, that you're probably going to have a concerted effort from law enforcement and you know, the state's district attorney's offices and come out against this. But even that hasn't really started too much, other than the folks down at the DA down at the Cape. But it's still, it's always striking me as odd how many people don't know it's there. And then the instant reaction from them when you explain the question to them is that, well, it's going to fail. It's not. You know, I mean, there's a really good possibility.
It could very easily pass, and I agree with you. It's a matter of talking it up so that people who would vote in favor will actually get out of their armchairs and vote that day.
And we're almost 15 years into 215 out in California now. Or in California now is revisiting the whole issue again, where they're looking. There may be a question on their ballot this fall, which would essentially legalize marijuana across the board. It would allow for regulated sales in any place that allows alcohol sales now, and they would reenact in a state tax stamp, which is fascinating. Like, they figure it's okay. It's been 15 years since Prop 215. Nothing has changed. We still have these dispensaries getting raided by the DEA, so no good is actually happening from a legal standpoint. We just open the floodgates, and it'll make the feds go away, and everyone will be happy.
I couldn't find the In-City Times. No. There's a bunch of copies of the African Radiant around here, but that In-City Times is impossible to find. I don't know what the deal is with that newspaper.
Are you looking in the bathroom?
There's nothing. There's nowhere. There's a nice article. I have an article in there this week. My interview with Claire Schaefer Duffy about her arrest, her trial, her Guantanamo trial. There's just an amazing letter in there that I wanted to read, but maybe next week. I wanted to talk about two things that I also feel ambivalent about, just like I feel ambivalent about the In-City Times. One of them is Jordan Levy's blog. I'm not going to read any blog posts this week. I just wanted to read a collection of, on the 25th of June, I just cut and pasted the list of titles of recent blog posts. And they're all in all capital letters, which the internet, of course, means you're shouting. And also, I think just the sense of them is they're shouting. So I'm going to have to shout a little bit here. Words! You can't take them back! They just don't get it, do they? Are they kidding? I may just scream! Is this truly reality? 3.5 million for what did you say? Polling! What would we do without it? Be careful what you buy! It works! Bird do? Why do we ask such dumb questions? There you go.
You ended that on a very Jerry Seinfeld note.
Well, and the funny thing is, he doesn't include himself as one of the we in the article. Do you guys know about some Jordan Levy manhole cover? Does this make any sense?
I'm so glad you just said that.
There was not the most recent, because he puts a couple out a day. One of the ones yesterday was about this whole thing about the Jordan Levy manhole. And he was all like, you know, some of you will know what I mean, and some of you are not going to get this one. And I was like,
when's he going to come out of the closet?
Oh, that's what I was. I was like, is this some kind of gay thing? What are you talking about? Anyway.
He's a bear, you know?
I'm glad we're speculating on his sex life. This is.
I'll bet you he goes home and secretly reads Andrew Sullivan's Daily Dish blog every day.
For better or for worse, I'm not gay, and I love Andrew Sullivan's
blog.
Oh,
yeah, he's great.
I've been reading that guy since I was in college. He's one of our great, you know, British conservative gay Catholic writers in this country, Andrew Sullivan. Check him out. So I'm glad that you brought this up to Jordan Levy and his secret sex life, because I feel like that sort of takes us as we're descending down the staircase of taste. We come next to the city council and the vendor stuff, and there are city councilors who are willing to fight against this vendor stuff to the bitter end. I guess people should come down to the council meeting or write their councilor if they want to support the vendors.
Yeah, this one is not dead at all, Mike, and Councillor Palpatine could actually end up having a stroke this week if things play out appropriately.
Oh, no, I need to figure out what you mean by Councillor Palpatine.
He's the guy who represents Shrewsbury Street. What is that, District 2? Is it District 2? What district is that? District 1?
That's my district.
There you go.
He ran unopposed. Oh, I
know.
I love it.
He did pretty well, too, in that election, I have to say.
For being unopposed.
I want to mention one thing that I mentioned in last week's unintelligible essay, which was to look at the vendor thing in the same way that the great urban theorist and practitioner Jane Jacobs did, which is you look at your local economy kind of like you look at a rainforest. And if you have an area of desert and you want to get some trees there, you know, money in this metaphor is the water. You want to get some trees there. You know, you got to sort of build the area up, right? You got to start off. If you go to your desert and every day you cut down everything that's not a tree, the trees are never going to grow. You need to have some shrubs come in. They can kind of fill a special niche. They can survive in some areas that don't get so much water. They'll drop some branches on the ground, some leaves on the ground. Those will help the water retain leaves. You get some different animals and plants in there. Then you'll build up a little bit of the soil that it takes for a real tree to be able to come in and grow. And I look at these vendors as being like that. Like, street vendors can go to an area that maybe, you know, is ready to go to the next level as far as businesses go. It's ready to have some more restaurants. It's ready to have some more storefronts, whatever. They can go in there and they can kind of like move with a lot faster than a regular business could. And by coming into the neighborhood, you know, maybe they add a little bit of extra competition. In fact, I hope they add a little bit of extra competition, because we need more competition in this world. But they also make it more vibrant. Like, you know, if there were places that I could, if there were more places to eat after work downtown, you know, I would like have my friends come and meet me downtown for dinner rather than having to wander, you know, down into Main South or out to Shrewsbury Street or out to Highland Street or whatever to have dinner. You know, if there was at least some kind of street vendor, then maybe we could say, hey, let's grab a pupusa or a hot dog or a falafel or whatever.
I'd like to see a pretzel vendor.
Something, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's just something.
Something novel that isn't usually found around here.
And that's the kind of that's the model that I think that having vendors allows us to have, is that it allows you to kind of say, hey, are we ready to have another restaurant downtown? Well, the vendor can come in and kind of be a stepping stone to that. And once people are, you know, thinking about a neighborhood as a place where stuff is going on, the restaurants that are there are going to do better overall. And then it's a place where somebody is going to say, hey, I'm willing to invest in opening another storefront, you know, because there's already the foot traffic, or it's already mentally where people are going to go to eat.
Well, maybe the street vendor will get so much business that he'll want to rent the empty storefront that he's sitting in front of.
I don't know. Councillor Palpatine had this thing about, do we really want to encourage people to set up a little table outside of a lawyer's office and, you know, charge $30 to write you a will? And I think the answer is yeah.
Absolutely.
It's called LegalZoom, and it's a very successful business model. You know, I mean, this isn't something new. I mean, you've got websites that undercut, you know, that sort of practice quite easily. You know, they do a great job at it.
You know, if you had a district of the city where there were people on the street, you know, legally sanctioned, but on the street performing law, then whenever people said to themselves, oh, I need to get an attorney for this or for that, what area of the city are they going to go to first when they're trying to sort through all the million attorneys, right? They're going to say, well, here's somebody in the legal district. That seems like an extra credibility, or somebody with an office in the legal district. I don't know. Anyway, it's worth it for people to contact their counselors this beautiful July 4th weekend, or to come down to the city council meeting and speak out. Because it sounds like most of the people who have spoken out so far, besides the counselors, have been like people who own vending businesses or people who own non-vending businesses, who all have, you know, like any individual restaurant owner is going to say, absolutely, keep any competition away from me, whether they're in a cart or they're not in a cart. You know, do I want another restaurant opening up next to me? Probably not. I mean, long term, it probably helps the neighborhood and helps the business, but short term is mostly what people got to care about. And short term, somebody opening up next to you, probably more likely to, the competition is more likely to lower your profits than to increase them in the short term. Anyway, and that's the end of my rant on vendors.
Well, there's two other things going on.
All right.
This week. One is the $20 million Union Station garage did not open.
Okay.
As predicted by Robert, whatever his name is,
Moylan,
last Christmas.
As confidently predicted.
Confidently predicted. And then the other thing is that Union Station is going to have Mystery Science Theater, Maxwell Silverman's Tool House guy, come in and magically transform it into this restaurant heaven.
I think it's a good sign that somebody is still willing to put money into Union Station, which has not done very great for the businesses or museums or whatever that have opened there.
Yeah, well, I have no problem with it being a successful business, you know.
Yeah, good for them.
That would be great.
Good for them.
Other than that, today is Summer Nationals Day. It's supposed to be nice today, and Green Hill Park is the place to go if you're a motorhead.
Yeah, what I'm seeing right now is that overcast, from what I gather, that's not actually overcast. That's just air pollution from the burnouts last night. Yeah, that'll blow off probably by 11 or so.
It's
supposed to be
really nice today and this evening.
Yeah.
You know, I watched the fireworks with a friend of mine, basically just outside the library, and I tell you, I think we could smell gunpowder by the end of it.
Oh, easily.
Like, either that or somebody was setting up fireworks right behind us. I was just surprised that all the way across town the fireworks were smellable.
Or maybe someone actually was just shooting at you at the same time.
I don't know.
With a silencer, yeah.
I have a couple more things. Dan Kelly called me this morning, who we talked to in the past about the Anthony Mora blog, and I haven't gotten a chance to listen to his complete concern, but I think we will probably put it on the show if it's relevant to the life of the city of Worcester.
Dan Kelly is?
Dan Kelly, the Anthony Mora guy. The guy who was, we played it, the only guy who I think we ever played a call from on the show.
Someone actually called me this past Monday, completely randomly called me. It must have been 6 o'clock at night. So can you explain to me why there is a guy standing in Lincoln Square with a sign that says 911 conspiracy?
Are they doing it right now? This must be why he called. They must be doing it again right now, huh?
Well, I have to go down and get a picture.
Yeah.
You've probably seen the picture of them holding that sign somewhere down on Milbury Street, but I thought it was kind of bold to be taking that out onto Lincoln Square. And that's
especially with the Motorhead crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might not fly too well. Just saying.
Wrong target audience.
I'm not even being critical of the message or the messenger. I am saying that I would not be – might be fearful doing that this weekend. But, hey, good luck to you. Hope it works out.
I should mention that our phone number is 508-471-3897. Call us and leave a message, including a drunk dial, and we may play it on the show. I wanted to ask about this Q thing, because last week, again, or 2 weeks ago, I should say, in our mystery episode, last week I should say thanks to Tracy Novick for an awesome, awesome episode. 2 weeks ago in our episode that no one could hear, we talked a little bit about this person Q who Diane Williamson had responded to this person in her newspaper column, this person who had up until then apparently just posted a bunch of crap on the Telegram and Gazette website. But somebody was telling me that this person also is like part of the crowd of insiders who call into all the radio shows locally.
Yeah, I was listening randomly to Peter Blute. I started listening to a little bit more AM talk radio in the city. Because it's been so long. I do satellite radio, and it's been a long time since I listened to any local radio. I feel obligated, since I do that TAG show, to listen a little bit more. And I noticed right away that there actually is – it's a very insider-sounding sort of thing, like even on the part of the hosts, where you've got these callers that seem to be having their own, this own side conversation. There was a guy who was in the studio on the Peter Blute Show to pick up some like the Tornadoes tickets that he won, and he just happened to be one of their regular callers, and he was referencing himself and Q and some other guy in a very bizarre way that made it seem like they were having some sort of private conversation with Peter, and that their public conversation was actually something separate from the conversation at large. And it was strange. I don't know anything about these guys. I don't know who they are. I don't know if I could almost envision it being a bit of a put on from the talk show hosts themselves too, just to spur some sort of dialogue. You know,
have their producers calling in using weird voices, pretending to be actual.
I don't know
callers.
Who would call in on a radio show?
Well, I think that's
local
just
radio
it.
Show.
I mean, you know,
who would comment on a local blog post? It's probably the same phenomenon that there's 20 or there's 20 or 30 people who, are messing around on local blogs, and if one of them posts a comment, you're like, well, of course. And if somebody else posts a comment, it's like, oh wow, somebody who I've never heard from before.
What I do find interesting is where these folks show up. It's like, so they're on the TNG website and they're on, you know, like the Peter Blute Show. They're on that radio station, but you don't see them ever on the Worcester Magazine site, which, you know, their blog, you know, has some decent material and it can be commented on. I don't think you see them on any of the other city blogs. It's kind of interesting.
These people
that,
are all anonymous?
Apparently.
Well, then maybe Diane Williamson wants to out them all.
But I don't even know. I think it's odd, their choice of places to comment is a little odd. I don't know. I have no idea. It's weird. They're internet trolls, right? Local trolls.
These are some sociological observations that we're
Wasn't
just putting
sort of
out
like
there.
Like a collective Borg phenomenon between the TAG and CRN and the TAG radio station, the local media. Isn't there sort of this Borg collective consciousness that it's addressing?
I think it's called Spencer.
You know, I was reading that. Although, for example, if your URL appears in print, you should assume that you're not going to get any traffic from it. That apparently, when you say URLs on the radio, that's where you actually get people to type them in and check out your site. And Brendan, you were saying that you see some spiking on Radio Ball every time you're on Mike Messina's show, right?
Yeah, I've got a few people that you know have become kind of regular commenters. It seems as though they're working backwards through like the timeline, which is interesting because it's okay. This is an AM radio crowd. For all I know, they might not even be looking at timestamps, and they could be looking at things I wrote 4 years ago, thinking that it was thrown up last week. But yeah, there have been some small spikes. Nothing regular or nothing that I would ever bother tracking, but there does seem to be some follow through. I think there are a lot of people in the city who would like to be engaged in the conversation that takes place in the city, but don't necessarily see like an open door. And I think the web is the place where it gives people a little bit more time to think through, like, you know, a comment that they might want to leave, or engaging in a conversation where they're not holding their cell phone in their hand saying, "Do I really want to call and get yelled at by Jordan right now?" and decide not to.
Well, the biggest spike that I ever saw from local media mention of my blog was Diane Williamson's column last August. But I've had it mentioned on CRN, and I've had it mentioned on TAG. Never saw any slightest effect from those.
That's interesting. A few years ago, Kevin Cassen and I did a project about basically privacy of high school students' records, and this was a front page Sunday. I think the headline was actually Above the Fold article, you know, about high school students. Our URL was mentioned in the article, and I think that we got 12 visitors. But you know, Diane Williamson's column probably is drawing people who are a little bit more engaged with the material.
She wrote that she mentioned was that I had been doing the Gary Rosen spotting last year during the campaign, and so it may have been Rosen. Pro and anti Rosen people that were wanting to find out what the
or just was. Gary wanted to see his name over and over.
Yeah, it was just Gary.
Well, God bless that man.
Seriously.
Good one, Brendan.
The show is about out of time for this morning. Guys, thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Any exciting events that you guys want to plug this week in the city?
You know, I would really like to... I hope everybody is aware of the sculptures that are down at Elm Park right now. There's 25 pieces of semi-permanent sculpture that have been installed around Elm Park. They're not going to be like officially unveiled until the 17th of July, but they're there now, and they're pretty amazing. It really gives the whole park a bit of a different feel. It almost allows you to ignore that any minute now Park Ave could actually slide off right into Elm Park from all of the erosion.
Yes.
If you're able to, push that fear aside, there's some really amazing sculpture down there from Massachusetts artists that is worth checking out.
Jeff, you got anything?
Oh, I'm a blank slate now for the next week.
All right. Well, gentlemen, it's a pleasure talking to you. Everyone, thanks for still listening to this show, despite the fact that most of them have been unlistenable recently. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.